wake up to the roosters, eat breakfast for a booster. You alive, say hallelujah to the man, the mighty ruler. Because of him, you able to do it. If you on his side, then you ain't losing. He gave clothes, food, and your roof. He tell mountains, get them moving. It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning.
Wake up, wake up.
It's a great morning. Get up and go to that 9 to 5. Get up and get them dollar signs. Get up and go do overtime. Get up and put that overdrive.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Great Mornings Podcast with your boy James Earl Cray. And listen, I got a special guest today that I'm excited about. The very first thing we got in common is football, my heart, my love. So I can't wait to talk to this brother, but he goes so much deeper than that, so much farther than that. And I want y'all to really chime into this one and really get this one. We got Jay Barnett with us today, former NFL football player, and now turned black therapist, who's not just benefiting churches and benefiting the masses of people, but he speaks to black men by calling us king. And that's something that's very phenomenal and important to us, just the verbiage we use. So we're going to get into it, why he used that word. We're going to talk about some other things, but I want to introduce to all of you Jay Barnett. Yo, what's going on, Jay, man? Introduce yourself to the people for us, man.
King, what's up, brother? His name is Jay Barnett, author, international speaker, and lifestyle therapist, and mentor, former ball player. And man, I'm just excited, man, to talk with you today, man. Always good, man, to talk to, you know, fellow athletes, man, and to share. So I'm looking forward to the day, brother.
Absolutely, man. That's where I got to start at, man. Football, listen, my heart. It was my ticket out the country hood that I'm from.
Yeah.
From the age of 5, it's all I knew. So talk to us a little bit, man. I got a little bit of information on your journey. Realized you 4 years started at your university. Then you went to, had an opportunity to go play in the NFL with the Packers. I also saw something else we got in common. So I saw you were with the Tennessee Valley Vipers for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went out there, man. I was in camp, mini camp in 07.
Okay.
In Huntsville, right, man, and just didn't work out, you know. And that was my last stint. Actually, man, I was there, and we were working. I had a night shift deal working, and I was on that night shift, man. And I was sweeping, sleepy. It was about 2 a.m, and we had practice the next day. And I was just like, man, this ain't it. And that was when I left football after that trip, man. I left it.
Yeah.
And then I went back to school and got my degree. So, man, just talk to us about the journey to football, and then,
man. Yeah, King, and so it's funny you brought that up, man, because I was thinking about when you said that, I was thinking about when I was in Huntsville. You know, the journey of football, man, is so interesting, because what people don't realize is that, you know, how you talk about the heart and soul, man, and I mean, I can match that same level of dialogue or how you explained it, because it's what we all grow to really love. Because it's one of those things where football embraces you on such a level, man, that none of us has never experienced that type of acceptance, right? We've never experienced this type of camaraderie, this fellowship, this brotherhood. And for many of us, this fatherhood. Mm. You know, coaches were fathers to us.
Right.
And for me, man, it was just a place where I felt safe. I felt comfortable. But more importantly, man, I felt wanted. Because if you were a good player, you felt wanted by the team, right? The team made you feel that you were valuable, right? That you had something to offer. You know, everybody counted on you, that they knew that you was a playmaker. They knew that, you know what I'm saying? We in a rut, man. Like that right there, bro, that was my thing, to know that I can be counted on for something. And one of the things about the journey is that when we lose that part of us, man, we lose a part of our identity. Wow. And that was the challenge for me, is that when I lost that, man, especially when because I went to Tennessee after Green Bay, to the Vipers. And after that, man, it's like one of those things was like, man, do I really want to keep chasing this thing? And because what I realized is I wasn't chasing football anymore.
Wow.
I was really chasing my coping mechanism.
That's good.
It, it was how I was able to cope, because I knew in reality, I was not ready to deal with my reality. And to deal with the reality that football no longer could serve me. And not because we couldn't play. Mm-hmm. It was more like when you get up into the league and get into that level, it has nothing to do with your ability to play. It has everything to do with system. Mm-hmm. Do you fit the system? Do you fit, you know what I'm saying, this dynamic? Do you fit where we were going? And that was the reason why the Green Bay situation didn't work out, because they had this system and they were still bringing in these big backs, right? They were because they was transitioning from the Ahmad Green era, and they still mm-hmm. wanted this big bruiser. And at the time, you had LT, who was still kind of on the verge, and he was kind of this 5'10", 215-pound back, and he was loose. If he can block, he can run, he can catch. And the league hadn't really bought into that concept as of yet. And right. that was kind of like my position was like, I can run, catch, and block. Wasn't this big guy, you know, but and they brought in Sam Congato. He kind of, you know, he was like, he wasn't as elusive as Ahmad was, but he was kind of this big bruiser. And I'll never forget, and God rest Ted Thompson's soul, you know, because he just passed away. Mm-hmm. So Ted Thompson was a GM at the time when I was there. And I remember having a conversation with him, and he's talking to me about, listen, man, this is what we want to do. This is where we see you can fit. But then again, we're trying to look at which direction are we wanting to go, because Ahmad Green was what they were accustomed to.
Right.
So I get the phone call that they're going to sign Sam Congato or whatever, and that it wasn't going to bring me back. At that time, and I want to really pull out of this what it did to me at the time, the moment that I heard that we wasn't bringing you back, all I heard was that you weren't good enough. And that's not what they said. Mm. That's not what they said. They never said that I couldn't play football.
Wow.
They just said that we were going in a direction that we wanted to kind of keep this look to our offense.
Wow.
Because at the time they had William Henderson, who was a big fullback mm-hmm. back then. So saying all that to say is that when we have been bruised, when we have been broken, and when we have had certain experiences, and my experience with my dad dealing with rejection and really not having a really healthy father-son relationship, I made that moment about my childhood experience with my dad, because what it did was, this is saying to me, not what they said, that I wasn't good enough and I didn't fit.
Wow.
And for me, football was me trying to fit a mold that my dad couldn't. Man. Because if I can make it in football, I can prove to him I was able to become better than you without you being a part of my life. And that thing was attached to so many different things for me.
Yeah.
And just to lay that out, that was my journey. And when I got to that place, that's what led to my suicide attempt, because it's also going back to what I said. It's going back to, who am I now? Mm. Who do I become? Because as you said earlier, King, we love the game of football, man. Yeah. I ate, slept, breathed. You know, my cousins played in the league. My uncle played in the league. So that thing was like embedded in me.
Yeah.
So it was like, no, this is what you do. And not realizing that football was what I did. It wasn't who I was.
Wow.
And I wasn't able to make that distinction at the time, because I was so wrapped up in like, man, I got to have this.
Yeah.
Because having this gives me a sense of validation, a sense of purpose, but it gives me a sense of identity that I'm somebody. Because if you can look at me and say, oh, he played in the league, I have my identity.
Yes, sir.
And that birthed who I became after that.
Wow.
Because I had to realize is that you didn't have football, right, to define who Jay Barnett is. You had football to build who Jay Barnett will become.
Wow. Man, that's good. In fact, man, I'm going to have to send you an offering after this, because I feel like I'm in a session, man. Listen, it just resonates, man, because I can think about 2006, actually 2007 draft. And, man, I got my agent telling me, listen, third, you know, fourth to seventh round, you're going to be all right. Fourth to seventh round come. I literally leave the house and I go running. He called me. He said, well, listen, free agent, it's going to be better because you'll get to pick where you want to go. So this free agent deal is going to be better. I'm waiting. He like, well, Carolina called and asked about you. New England said I hadn't graduated yet. So New England was like, they don't take nobody that don't have a degree. So he giving me all these scenarios and nothing happens, dude. And I didn't watch football for a year after that, man. And
then I got to try
with the arena thing. And I just like, man, this ain't it. My body was starting to break down. So, man, I'm just sitting here listening to you and just thinking about it. And there's so many people out here, man, that athletics, academics, you know, all these different things, where they went to school at, you know, the community they from, they identify themselves with that. And if that thing ever gets snatched, man, you find yourself in a really dark place. So I hope that people are listening and they're able to identify before it's too late. Because like you mentioned, and I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more. And I remember Deion Sanders, same way, suicide attempt when it felt like this thing was snatched away. And people got to realize when we identify ourselves in certain stuff and it's pulled away, man, it can take us to a dark place. So I appreciate that, man. I want to ask you this one more question about football. And you kind of hit on it a little bit, but I know for football taught me so many valuable life lessons.
Oh, like, yeah.
Get knocked down, get back up. You mentioned probably the best part of football, the locker room, man. I can't even begin to tell people stories.
Oh, man, dude.
Yeah, so tell man. Us a little bit about some of the life lessons, man, that the game taught you.
Man, some of the life lessons, King, man, it's like, you know, football is where I really learned how to work with so many different people because, you know, you're kind of placed into this space with guys with all different belief systems, guys from all walks of life, guys that, you know what I'm saying, different dynamics. And for me, it was really about unconditional acceptance.
Mm.
Because, you know, if the unconditional acceptance for me was that we may not believe the same, but we share the same belief in a common goal.
Right.
And that common goal was always what? To win a championship.
Yeah.
And so with that, it allowed me to put aside how someone had felt about my skin color because I played with a lot of racist guys.
Right.
It was able to allow me to put aside someone's core values because a lot of dudes was just like, yo, you know what I'm saying? I'm just out here. You know what I'm saying? Listen, I'm out here doing my thug
right.
But so it allows you to accept guys for who they were. And I think that's the challenge that even when you see in dating that women don't understand is that a man wants to be accepted for who he is. You may not agree with it, but can you really accept this part?
That's
because,
good.
You know, playing ball, man, you hear some stuff in the locker room that you like, damn, bro, you think like that? You
right.
feel like that? But again, you know what I'm saying? I'd never forget, you know, one of my good friends, man, you know, he was older than me, and I never forget, man, he, at the time, I'm young, I'm like 18 or 19, and, you know, I'm got this whole complexion thing. Like, I like yellow bones, and we're having this discussion about women. I'm like, man, give me a yellow chick, boo, boo. And he liked these dark-skinned girls. And it's just like, man, yellow chick can't do nothing for me, bro, boo. And so I was like, man, bro, you missing out, dude. So he was like, man, give me a chocolate woman, bro. That's what I'm talking about, man. I'm trying to tell you, bro, you missing out. And so, so in the midst of the conversation, he go, hey, dog, you like what you like what I like, bro. And he was like, bro, I don't want to hear nothing else about it. So we get into this whole argument. And when it came down to a light-skinned girl broke his heart.
Wow.
So, but it was in those moments, man, that you got to hear how somebody felt without, you know what I'm saying, trying to sway them into, no, you should like this, but it was more like, man, okay, I can respect that. And the game taught me the self-respect. It taught me the acceptance, but more importantly, man, that perseverance.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I tell parents who raising kids, especially boys, man, if it's not football, get them in some type of sports activity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it teaches camaraderie, it teaches togetherness, how to work. But I think it really teaches boys discipline because you got to be disciplined to play the game.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's crazy because people are like, you still get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock, go work out. I'm like, hell yeah. Like, dude, like I may not play, but I may not play ball, but I'm playing in the game of life. And so for me, the approach is still how on Mondays, you know what I'm saying, you got your player personnel package and you look at who you playing against that week. Like in my mind, I don't have to look at a player personnel package, but Monday is still a preparation day, or should I say Sunday.
Yeah.
And so, you know what I mean? And the game just taught so much, man. And that's what I miss, King, about it more so than anything. So when I was reading up on you, man, and I'm just like, man, I miss having conversation with ball players because we think so different, bro. It's
We do.
I don't really, you know, no offense, but regular dudes who didn't play, and I'm not saying a guy had to play in the league or nothing like that, guys who didn't play ball, like, it's just, they just different, man. They wired different. It's like, our brain is just kind of like, you know, we understand process.
Right.
We understand that off season is meant to break you for a reason.
Right.
We're not looking for an easy way out. And it's kind of like for ball play, it's like, if it ain't hard, I'm like, all right, something ain't right.
Yeah. That's weird, but that's how it is, man. And something you said that I hope some ladies catch this, because I know there's a lot of single ladies that are listening, and there's a lot of single ladies and a lot of dating ladies that are dating. This is something that they might want to add to their list. You might want to check and see if the brother was an athlete, because you'll learn a lot just in knowing if he was an athlete. Because as you mentioned, we're wired differently. We think differently. We believe in process. You know, we're not in a rush to do a lot of stuff. We're extremely patient with stuff, man. So that's valuable information to a sister that's out there listening. I'm telling you, make sure you check and see one of your things on the list, if this dude was an athlete, because it'll help you understand why we think the way we think. Man, let me ask you this, because it's a big deal in sports right now. We can kind of keep it related to sports. Man, mental health has become so prominent in sport. Like when I was playing, you didn't go tell a coach you was dealing with depression or, you know what I mean? You might lose scholarship, man. You know, anything like that. But now the one that really brought it to life for me, man, is when Kevin Love walked off the court one game and they came back and then he did this article, I think in Sports Illustrated, about his continued battle with depression and with mental health. And now it's became prevalent in the world of sports, man. Can you speak to that? Because I know you made the transition from athlete to therapist. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Man, I think, you know, King, I'm glad that it has really taken a prominence in the culture of sports, because for so long, we have celebrated athletes being these warriors.
Right.
But then again, we didn't hold space for their humanity.
Wow.
Right. And to really allow a guy to break down and to be emotional outside of the court and outside of the field, the stadium, you know, in the diamond, the hockey rink, wherever it is, it's like we celebrate and we embrace when guys cry because they won a championship or guys cry because they lost. But we find it difficult to embrace a brother when he says, man, like my head ain't right.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? We find it difficult when a guy says, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't feel like practicing today, man. Like, there's some things that's going on in the world that is affecting me. And I don't know if I can be mentally stable enough to walk on the court or to walk on the field. And so I think it's important that we are allowing athletes to feel, because what we taught them is we taught them how to win in the field while they were losing at life.
Wow, man.
And as you know, is that this game has an expiration date on it, no matter who you are.
Right.
There's an expiration date on your invincible, because we all feel that we're invincible, as we should when you're young, right? You're like, man, I can do anything. Nothing can stop me. You know what I mean? And so I think every young guy has that. You know, it's the birth of your testosterone, you know what I'm saying, reaching its apex in its life. So I don't think that's out the norm. However, I think we have to bring balance to the human form of it that says, hey, King, I know as strong as you are, as fast as you are, as dominant as you are, you do hurt.
Yeah.
A heartbreak can affect your game.
Wow.
Your dad not being in the stands can affect your level of play. Knowing that your mom is dying of cancer you know what I'm saying, can bother you to where you feel like you don't want to get out of your bed and you want to stay in the dorm all day. And we have to normalize that, King, because if you don't create the space for an athlete to be human, you are training a machine to only function in a sports environment.
Wow.
So when you place a guy like that in life and he's in a relationship and things are unraveling and unfolding and he doesn't know how to process his emotions, you get a guy who grabs a girl and chokes her and he doesn't remember what happened.
Wow.
And I don't think because he's abusive, it's because he's never been coached.
Wow.
Or given the language and the space to understand that there's stuff that you can't manage from your physical ability.
Wow.
Because that's what we're all taught, right?
Wow.
Man, get this weight off of you. You're doing 225. Yeah. Come on, give me two more. Give me three more. Come on, get it off you. Get it off you. And we get like, get it off me. You know what I'm saying? We've been taught to push physically.
Aggression.
But no one has really taught how to push mentally and not to overlook the issue, but to push in to say, all right, what am I feeling right now?
Yeah.
Because this ain't a play. This ain't, you know what I'm saying? This ain't a nine route. This ain't a seven route. This ain't a dig. You know what I'm saying? This ain't no zone. This is a real life, like, yo, my mom is dying. I don't know. You know what I mean?
It's amazing, man. I've never heard another guy come from that perspective. I'm going to tell you when it struck for me, the Ray Rice situation, right? Which was years ago, of course. But, I mean, social media world slandered him, slayed him. But I went to thinking, man, we are trained from Pee Wee League to be aggression. Knock they in the dirt. Bust they head. You know, we've been taught aggression. And then when nobody coaches you, like you mentioned, how to deal with it, how to control it when you're away from the game, your response is, I've always been taught, get the defender off of me. And man, I got so much backlash for that perspective, but I knew as an athlete, like we've been taught everything about the game is aggressive.
And everything.
Everything about it. And we've been taught that. And man, that's why I think people like yourself need it, not just for athletes, but I also looked up some stuff and I saw that you thrive on the idea of being a black therapist. And man, I want to read off a couple statistics real quick, primarily from the black community, but also touching on ministry because your father's a pastor. I'm understanding. Mm-hmm. Here's some of the statistics, man. 50% of pastors don't meet regularly with an accountability person or group. 85% have never, I'm in this 85%, taken a sabbatical. 70% consistently fight depression. 77% feel they don't have a good marriage. 40% report a serious conflict with a parishioner at least once a month. And 91% of leaders have experienced at some point some form of burnout in ministry. And 18% say they are fried to the crisp right now. And man, I want to talk about, and this is gonna help me.
Man, send that to me, King.
I want to talk about it for me, man, because like I'm one of those 85%. I never take a sabbatical, man. I preach every Sunday of the year. I probably didn't preach one Sunday last year, and that was just on our birthday celebration. Even when I took away from the church, I was preaching at another church. So, and I go hard and never, because I've been taught, because ministry, much like being an athlete, you're taught, don't show weakness. The people depend on you. You got to press through. That's going to show your faith. And then that becomes not only what I learned athletically, not only what I learned in ministry, but that's the black community too. As a little boy, I was told, my daddy pushed me down on a bicycle and said, now get up. Don't you cry. You know, be tough. Boys don't cry. Men don't cry. All these things. And then we have these statistics. And I just want to ask you, man, what do you think makes such statistics so high amongst pastors and men and women in the black community and people just in general?
I think when you look at the history of blacks in general, and you look at, for an example, I was watching the movie Judas and the Black Messiah last night. And, you know, you look at Fred Hampton and you look at his life. And when you look at Fred, I mean, Fred died at 21. you know, these were kids.
Wow.
These were kids that were revolutionizing, you know what I'm saying? That were very, you know, impactful on our community and our society at that time. And you look at how the people really depended on him and how they really, you know what I'm saying, really focused on having someone to lead them. And when you look at the Black community, we've always looked to have a leader.
Wow.
You know, whether it was Malcolm X, whether it was Dr. King, whether it was Fred Hampton, whether it was Marcus Garvey, if it was all of these different, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, monumental Black figures, they've always had this role of leading. And this was passed down into our culture. And this is where this has been adopted even in churches. And I can look at my father for an example to really be personal and be more transparent. My mother said this to me one day, we was talking, and she says, "I admired your dad, how he always went hard when he preached, but this man never gave me or our family the same amount of energy and time as wow. he gave to the people."
Wow.
He always saw the people as being, they need me.
Wow.
And this is where we fall as Black men in ministry, because we make the church our first ministry. Mm-hmm. And really, if you're a single man in ministry, you are your first ministry. And if you're a married man in ministry, your family and your wife is the first ministry. And this is what has caused the burnout. You see almost 15,000, I know this is a statistic, almost 15,000 leaders are walking away from churches monthly. You're seeing suicide rate. Suicide is up in pastors and leaderships because there's this Messiah complex
right.
that Fred Hampton, he gets out of prison and he's like, all right, everybody's like, you know what I'm saying? Hey, you know, what's going on, man? Glad to see you. And immediately he's like, all right, I'm ready to go back to headquarters.
Wow.
I'm ready to go back in, ready to go back to work. And there's no space to rejuvenate, to regroup, to reassess,
yeah.
you know, because I believe had Fred really reassessed, he would have discovered the Judas.
Wow.
And this is why a lot of us falter in ministry, is because we have this concept in his mind that, and I would say it's a very selfish perspective, unintentionally, because we feel that the people won't make it without us.
Wow.
In fact, the people will, because God is just using you as a vessel.
As a vessel.
Because if the people won't make it without you, you are now placing them to operate in the spirit of idolatry, and now they see you as God.
Good gracious, man. That's good.
And this is why sabbaticals are important. Because I heard this one pastor say the reason he takes sabbaticals and he allow other people to preach, he said, how dare I to think that God always has a word through me?
Wow.
And he said, the times I've set and allowed other ministers to get up and speak and preach or is allowed me to be fed in a way that I didn't know that I need feeding. But then it allowed God to use and to speak through these other instruments that I've had on my staff.
Wow.
Because think about it. God works. He really does work in seasons.
Yeah.
And this pastor said, I learned to listen in seasons where God would sit me down and said, I don't want you preaching for the next 2 months.
Wow.
I'm going to sit you down. And he said he would step aside and God would literally use like his associate pastors and they would just go to work. But it allowed him to regroup.
That's amazing.
It allowed him to regen. And when we can learn that God doesn't need us to get it done, he's just using us.
That's good. Wow.
Right? And using us in a way to where you are the conduit. You are the portal. You are the vehicle for this time.
Yeah.
And then as God is saying, hey, all right, I need you to part. I need you to regroup because I'm getting ready to take you to another level. And this is why a lot of my dad, and he's been pastoring 30 years, I believe had he allowed himself to step away when he and my mom when he and my mother divorced, my father remarried, I think about like a year and a half, 2 years later. Mm-hmm. He was married 8 years, and my stepmom passed of breast cancer. He didn't take no time off. He kept preaching and kept preaching. And it's just like, dude, this is not healthy.
Yeah.
And I believe he, and he said this, that had he learned how to pastor, that it would allow him to elevate in a way that God would have really used him in a great way, because he eventually burnt out. He eventually, like, there was no rhema of word, because even with myself, when I take breaks, I come back, man, with more fire. I come back with new revelation, because remember in Isaiah, I think it's Isaiah 18:31, if I'm not mistaken, he says, behold, I do a new thing.
Yeah.
And so many times I believe that we miss what God is doing because we stuck in what God did.
Wow, man.
And think about this. He was always doing something new. When he got Moses out of the way, what was he doing? He was bringing Joshua and Caleb, right? And so that new thing was that Moses, you taking him far enough. All right. Somebody. You won't get to the promised land, but there's a reward for you. Come on, Joshua. And as Joshua was coming along, Joshua was preparing Caleb.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to mentor and build who's coming. Right, right now, bro, I am working with like a few young brothers that are going to be powerful.
Wow.
And right now, I got about three solid dudes that if, God forbid, something was to happen to me, they could step in my place and really take over. Wow. And I've been working, and I tell them all the time, you got to be ready to pass the baton.
Yeah.
You have to, because what that does is it shows, right? It shows the level of growth, not only in you, but in them.
Yeah.
Because if my mentee can't showcase where he's grown, what does it say about me? I'm stunning his growth.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Listen, man, I just can't. I don't even got the words to explain it, man, because it's exactly my thought process. But my thing is implementing, right? And that could be anybody that's listening right now. Like we think about these things because we know grandfather, grandmother time undefeated, right? And at some point, I like the way you use it, there's an expiration date at some point. But we got to make sure we're training up the next generation and training up those that will be successors to us. Listen, man, I keep hearing you say the word king, and I know there's an acronym for it. I want, if you will, just break that down for us a little bit, man, and talk to us about what brought that word upon.
So what brought that word, like my mom has always called me that, you know, that's my nickname is King. Okay. She's always called me that. But where really, when I really started really operating in it, I tell this story back in 2012. I was getting ready to write my first book, and I had a conversation with a gentleman who was from, some parts of Africa. And so I got connected with him through another brother who was watching the work that I was doing in the community. And he said, hey, man, I'll pay for this dude to consult with you. And he's like, I just think that he can really help guide you and direct you. So anyway, the guy says, man, I'll meet you at Starbucks. So I show up at Starbucks, man, I got my fold and everything. So we sit down, we start talking, and the guy asks me, he says, who are you? And so, you know, I'm like, man, you know, I'm you know, ex-football player, you know, I'm a trainer now. I got my training company, business, work with athletes. He says, man, who are you? He's like, you're telling me about what you do, but who are you? And so he goes into the story of his dad, who was raising him. When he was a young age, he said, I'll never forget my dad looked at me. I think he said he was like 9. And his dad asked him, what did he wanted to be when he grew up? And he said, I think he wanted to be an ambassador or something like that. I can't remember. And so he said, his dad says, no, you are not an ambassador. You are a king that just happened to be an ambassador.
Wow.
And I can't remember. And so in detailed, I think that's what it was. But anyway, the gist of the story was that his dad was teaching him about who he was.
Wow.
That no matter what he became, is that what he took into what he was doing was who he was.
Wow.
Because that was associated with his core values. It was associated with his identity. it was associated with his belief system, with his character. And he said, the biggest issue that I see with you black men, that I always got to do it in his voice, the biggest issue I see with you black men is that you guys don't know who you are.
Wow.
He says, ever since that I've been a little boy and I come to America, I knew that I was a king, man. He said, when I walk into a room with these white people, they see me as being this black man and I consult his business, but they don't know that I am a king that is doing business with him.
Wow.
And I was just like, bro, James, bro, when I tell you, bro, I was blown away. And I'm sitting there writing this, and he says, I want you to create something that would outlive you. So at the time, I was creating a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he says, you, all of you ball players, you athletes, you create these nonprofits. What do they do? And I said, well, mine is going as a 5-week program. It's going to teach kids, you know, self-development, mental endurance, mental toughness, professional development, all that. Everything was centered around mental. And this is before I even got involved in mental health.
Wow.
And I'm talking about this at 30 years old. I'm like, everything is about, because I realized that all of my battles that I lost were mental. Battles that I lost mentally, and then I carried it out in the physical aspect. So you think losing, you start to act
losing.
Losing. So he says, I want you to create something, man, that will outlive you. He said, okay, you're going to give out turkeys for, like, he was just like, and I was like, man. He's like, what else are you going to do your nonprofit? I was like, well, I do back to school drives. Okay, what are you going to do after you give kids some backpacks? I was like, you know, we'll start preparing. He says, this is a lot. He says, but how are you changing their mindset?
Wow.
And this, when I went into writing the book, he says, you need to write a book and create a program. That's how you change the world. And that's how you begin to change people.
Yeah.
Change the program of these other young black men that are like you, that are a bunch of athletes. And then when you're done, you're trying to create a nonprofit. And how are you going to make money? Like, he just went on and on. So he says, I normally charge $200 an hour, but I don't know why I'm talking to you for free.
Wow.
As he told me. So, bro, it was a 3-hour meeting, and I had all of these notes. He says, when I see you next time, you need to have this book completed. You need boom, boom. Bro, I didn't get back in touch with this dude probably until maybe 4 or 5 years, and I didn't get in touch with him. The guy who connected me told me, I said, man, where is he at? He says, oh, man, he's been back in Africa for like many years now. I was like, what? He said, but I would tell him, he says, man, by the time we got in touch, I was on my second book.
Wow.
And the dude was like, and but what that shows you is that one conversation can change your trajectory in life.
Wow.
And what that did was, he said, I called you a king because I see you as I see myself.
Wow.
And from that moment, I see brothers as kings, because when I begin to heal and begin to do the work on myself and realizes that I can only see you as I see myself.
That's good.
And I would never at this point, because I had my battles with depression and suicide, at this point in life, I couldn't hurt myself. So why would I want to hurt you?
Wow.
I can only edify and build myself up. So therefore, to call you a king and to look at what you're doing and be like, brother, you're doing some dope, amazing things. Stick with it and not feel some type of way.
Wow.
That's because I've done that to myself. And when we can understand that being a king, and the acronym that I created for my program, the King Program, is knowledge is necessary gain. The gain that I acquired, the knowledge that I acquired was necessary for this gain of life. Because what I realize is that I can only create from the perspective that I see and that I think. And if I'm going to build a kingdom, it has to start here. And the kingdom that I build is associated with the thoughts that I think. Because if I want to establish legacy, it's going to start with how I see myself.
Wow.
And that's what I want every young black man, even yourself and what you're doing. I speak life into you. That, man, you are exactly where you're supposed to be.
I receive it, man.
And you didn't miss nothing. God has placed everything in you for a specific time, or should I say an appointed time, to be released when it needs to be released.
I receive that, man.
That's why your life has happened in stages.
Wow.
that when it's time for you to move to this next stage, what he has in you will be released. This message that I'm teaching about men healing could not have been taught 4 years ago because I was not there.
Yeah.
But it's been in me, and God released it, because what happened is almost like it's there. And when you begin to cultivate it through life experiences and spending time in him, but more importantly, spending time with you.
Wow.
That's when God says, okay, now I can reveal to you the secrets and the mysteries of the plan that I have for you. And that's really, man, the keys to success.
Yeah.
And that's where you are. Everything that you're doing with this podcast is God pouring into you so you can go back and pour into you, and then you can pour into others.
Yeah, man, I received that, man. I appreciate that. Listen, bro, I told you, man, I'm going to have to send you a donation offering us up, man. This podcast is going to be one that I got to listen to over and over. And it's good, man. And I hope other young brothers and young people and people just in general that's listening, I hope they're listening to the things that you're saying, because it's important for us to be able to get ourselves built up to a position where you are, that we can do the same for somebody else. So, man, the last thing is just get you to tell people where they can find you at, what you do, social media, man. I'm going to go follow you as soon as I get off here. So if you want to give us your social media information.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You can follow me at King J. Barnett. On Instagram, Twitter, and those are just only the platforms. I don't use Facebook, but it's all the same on Facebook. Okay. And my website, too, if you want online coaching, counseling, is kjbcoaching.com. And so it's basically the acronyms of my name, King J. Barnett, but it's kjbcoaching.com. So, yeah.
Well, listen, everybody, y'all make sure y'all go follow this man, this king who's spoken into my life, preferably has spoken into all of your lives. Go follow him right now, Twitter, Instagram. I'm about to do so. Check him out on his website. Support what he's doing any way that you possibly can. Listen, bro, we appreciate you, man. Thank you for joining us today. This session has been impactful, eye-opening for me. And Jay, we appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot,
man,
bro.
Thank you.